Joining us now on From the Stand from the Ron Scott Communications Center is Paul Dye, who is the editor of Kit Planes magazine. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm really happy to be here. You got a nice view.
Yes. And not only editor of Kit Planes magazine, a former NASA flight director.
Yep.
So you've got the entire spectrum, home builds to rockets.
We did everything from J3 Cubs up to the space shuttle. Yeah, we got 25 miles an hour at Mach 25 covered.
Excellent. Tell us a little bit about how you, first of all, made it to NASA and then on to Kit Planes.
Well, I grew up in the Twin Cities and got an opportunity to start working on airplanes when I was about 13, and that led to a pilot's license when I was in high school, and then aeronautical engineering school at the University of Minnesota, and I got this opportunity to intern down at NASA, or actually a co-op program, so I spent 2 years going back and forth between school and that was right at the start of the shuttle program, and when they offered me a permanent job, I said, this is cool, I got to do this. So we ended up flying space shuttle for 34 years.
My goodness. Are there any moments that stand out, either trying moments or
good or bad?
Yes.
You know, I get asked that question all the time, and I ended up being the longest-serving flight director in NASA history, and there were so many of them that any one particular thing is really hard to pick out. All the flights were amazing in their own way. I know that a lot of people thought, well, gee, it's just going up again and doing something right in low Earth orbit. But, you know, every single one had its special mission and was very, very exciting.
And like all of aviation, they're you know, even the people who are flying in here today, I mean, there's an inherent risk involved in flight. There's also a much bigger risk involved in space flight. And I think the public kind of took the shuttle for granted.
I think they kind of did, you know, like, yeah. But anytime you're sitting on that much explosive and you're blasting somebody into space, you're going from zero to Mach 25 in 8.5 minutes. That's a lot of energy to be released. And then coming back, you got to take that energy back out. So both ends were pretty, pretty exciting.
Yes. Yep. I was fortunate enough to see two launches, and the last one was John Glenn's
return to space. Oh, yes. I was flight director for that.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. And we were actually in the VIP section, and someone's car alarm went off with the rumble from the shuttle. And
yeah, there's...
It was something. When people ask me about it, I say it's the only time I've ever seen sound.
Yes.
Looking at it, you could just see this wave
coming
of
across
sound.
coming across the swamp. Yes.
Yes, it was one of the most amazing experiences of my life.
It's very cool.
I can't imagine what it was like to be actually a full part of all of that.
Yeah, it was an exciting time.
So you said you started building airplanes at 13. What airplane?
I started rebuilding a couple of J3 Cubs. There was a local fixed base operator that had bought a couple of wrecked L4s. He wanted to restore his J3s, and he formed an explorer post.
Okay,
was what they were called back in scouting back then.
Still are.
And we were able to go out there two nights a week and work on the airplanes. And when they got done, we got flying one. We got an hour of flight time for every 2 hours we'd worked on it for gas and oil.
Excellent.
That was a pretty cheap way to get a license.
Did you solo the Cub?
No. Yes, I soloed the Cub. Yes, that was my first airplane I soloed in, and I did have to fly a Cessna 150 for a few hours to get the instrument and nighttime before I got my private, but. It was a great time.
It sounds very familiar. I soloed a Cub as well, but then had to move to the Cessna
to
finish up the training.
Right. That's right. Yep.
So how did you get to be at Kit Planes?
You know, I guess I grew up reading aviation magazines, and I always thought, boy, this writers, that must be a cool job, something like that. And later on in my career at NASA, the last few years, I was asked to start writing a column and doing some flight reviews for Kit Planes. And I was enjoying that and getting more understanding of the writing process. And then when I announced that I was leaving the agency, I got a call from the owners of the magazine saying, we'd really like you to be the editor-in-chief. And I said, well, that's wonderful, but you know, I know nothing about the magazine business whatsoever. And they said, that's okay. We respect your expertise in experimental aircraft and the home-built world. And I said, well, I'll give it a try, and I figured I'd have them, you know, I could maybe keep them fooled for a couple of years, and I've been doing it 5.5 years now, and it's just great. The people I get to meet, the airplanes I get to enjoy, the writers that I get to bring in. We don't have any staff writers. Everybody's a contributor, and it's just fun to go out and find stories and find people.
How do you find the technology changing the magazine industry these days?
People want to know where the Kit Planes tower is.
Okay.
I tell them, well, I'm the editor. The editorial office is my study at home out in the desert in Nevada. And then I have an executive editor who's down in Irvine, California. And I have a layout man who's elsewhere. And then I have a marketing director. And all we do is communicate by email, and that's it. And when it's all done, we push the button, and it goes to a print to a printer, and the printer's master computer decides which print shop has 2 hours on the printing press at that time, and boom, it goes. It's all we're all distributed.
Excellent. What are some of the more unusual airplanes that you've had an opportunity to fly and write about?
Oh, let's see. There was the 90% Spitfire with a Chevy V8 engine, about 450 horsepower. That was a wonderful machine to fly. What a nicely balanced airplane. The little subsonics personal jet from Sonics Aircraft, I flew that about 3 years ago. And ever since I did, and I got the authorization on my license to fly that. And ever since then, I've been just kind of going, boy, I want to fly that again. I just want to fly that again. And I just put money down on a kit.
Oh, very good.
And then they're, you know, they're very light aircraft. I seem to attract the ability to test a lot of single-seat airplanes, a lot of fun ones, and the bush planes that you can just drop in on a postage stamp and take out in the backcountry, and a lot of fun.
Good. Talking with Paul Dye, who's the editor of Kit Planes magazine. When you flew the Sonics jet, was Bob Carlton involved in that?
Oh yeah, Bob Carlton was the guy who was running the training program, okay. And I guess I was their kind of their first student because I was the first guy other than a factory guy to fly the jet. And yeah, that's the airplane I flew. And every time I look at it, it was like, yep, flew that one. We'll build one.
And just to put a plug in for Bob, he's Barber Award winner.
Yep.
Bill Barber Award, and he's also going to be flying in the air show today.
He is, yes. Yeah. Yep.
What are some of the other airplanes that kind of stick out?
Oh, let's see. Last year I flew the Durand Mark V, which is parked out in front of the home-built headquarters right now. It's a reverse stagger wing, two-place, all-metal home-built airplane. Flew that. A variety of carbon cubs. Of course, I've got a couple of RVs. You know, the RVs are everywhere,
yes.
and they're great airplanes to fly. And so, you know, you just keep collecting different airplanes on your license or on your logbook, and after you pass three digits, you just kind of some of them blur together. Of course, the space shuttle. I spent a lot of time flying the space shuttle simulator, doing development work in that, and that was a totally different kind of flying, and that was a whole lot of fun. We refer to it as the heavy glider.
Yes.
Yeah.
Was that something that all flight directors did? Is flying the simulator or
not all flight directors? In the flight director office, we had different people that had different skill sets. We were kind of the knights of the round table. We usually had about a dozen flight directors, who then had thousands of flight controllers that worked for us. And some were specialists in some things and some in specialists in the other. And since I was kind of one of the silk scarf and goggles guys, I kind of picked the jobs that were flying kind of things. So that was a lot of fun.
What, you know, I've heard that it was very hard to fly. Was it really hard to fly? Or?
You know, if you bring a pilot into the simulator and you tell him the basics and he gets in there and flies it, they usually have a problem on their first landing. Okay. You bring a 10-year-old kid in there who's been raised on video games and they land it perfectly the first time. So, you know, you can extrapolate from that. The thing is, you know, you're crossing the threshold at about 265 knots or maybe 240 and you're touching down at 200 knots and most people have never even flown that fast, much less landed at that speed.
Right.
But once you knew the basics, a lot of people could get a decent landing out of it.
Well, good. Yeah. Have you had a chance to see the Bally Bomber?
I have. I have not had a chance to get up and talk to anybody about it. I got here on Thursday, and they had a tarp over it, but I was just sitting there and took some pictures from various angles, and it is just a cool airplane.
For those who don't know, explain exactly what
that is. The Bally Bomber is a single-seat scale B-17. It's just amazing. This guy, took 16 years building it, something like that, and I have not had a chance to meet him yet. I'm really looking forward to doing that. So it is a beautiful scale B-17.
All four engines
all
work.
All four engines work.
Place.
It's a four-engine, single seat, you know. And, you know, I'd like to talk to the guy who's flying it. I'd love to know how it handles.
Yes, and I'm sure we'll see an article in Kit Planes in that in the
probably
future.
Probably will. You know, we try and cover the technical details for our readers and give them the secrets.
Are there any other aircraft that are here that you've heard about that you have not seen yet or looking forward to seeing?
Let's see, that I have not seen. There are a couple of home builds that I want to spy in on, but but I haven't really had a chance to talk to, and I got to kind of see him, and then that'll remind me what the name. You know, a lot of times I grew up looking at airplanes and stuff, and people say, have you seen this airplane? Yeah, I have. Well, what's it called? I have no idea. Somebody sent me a picture the other day of an airplane that looked just like the Double Ender.
Okay.
That twin-engine bush plane that they're working on, it looked just like, but with a single engine. And I said, do you have the end number? Do you give me the end number? And it was called an Ascender. And it was licensed out of the same airport that the Double Ender is based at. So it's got to be a single-engine version of
sure.
that. And I'd love to see that.
Great. And the Honeywell 757 with the extra engine hanging on the side?
Well, yeah. You know, that's experimental, but it's not amateur-built. So it doesn't
true.
Quite fall into my wheelhouse.
But interesting nonetheless.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, yeah. The other airplane that's down – there are a couple of small personal jets down there by the home builder's headquarters. There's a couple of BD-5Js. Mm-hmm. There's one that I got to look in on when they were working on it, and it's painted like a hops bud. You know, the guys
– Yes.
A few people in Wisconsin drink beer.
Several of us, yes.
And the guy who owns it is one of the largest hops farmers in central Washington.
Okay.
And he built this thing, and they painted it like a hops bud. It's really neat. You should stop down and take a look at it.
That's down in Homebuilt?
Down in Homebuilt, yeah, right. Down near your Homebuilt headquarters.
We'll have to take a look for it.
Yep.
Paul, thank you for spending some time with us this morning. I'll let you get back to wandering the field
you
and looking
bet.
For
there's
interesting
airplanes. There's a lot of stuff to see around here.
Paul Dye is the editor of Kit Planes Magazine, and again, thank you for joining us this morning. I'm Steve Bush. This is From the Stand on EAA Radio.